dormitory at the Indiana State Prison, where she had unfettered access to other inmates. The closest thing to it is she was convicted, administratively convicted, of possessing a weapon. That was in the Indiana State Prison. When he was in Benton County Jail, he had various offenses, including tearing a toilet from the wall, possessing a nightstick in his cell, and a large extension cord that could be used as weapons. Yes. Correct. That's correct. When he was in the Benton County Jail prior to coming to the ISP, he had a nightstick. We don't know. The record is not clear what the weapon is. The documents just show that he had a weapons violation. Correct. Correct. And we understand that prison is a dangerous place and you have dangerous people, but in this case, Jeremy Wilkinson had various factors all along showing that he was an assault risk and a, you know, a threat waiting to happen. He was flagged in all capital letters, you know, escape and assault risk. Because of that, he was put in a maximum security facility. And then while he was there in that dorm, maybe he shouldn't have been there in the first place, but then while he was there, he was convicted of possessing a weapon, and that should have resulted in immediate removal from the dorm and into a more traditional cell block, but he was left there. The third thing, he was known throughout the prison as being a, quote, terrorist, or, quote, terrorist in training. And all those factors together show that he is a specific assault risk, not just that he had committed an assault in the past, and we don't know what might happen in the future. But it's unclear from the record. It's just the assumption is because he had sort of wreaked havoc in the past. It's not a terrorist in the sense of today we're talking about terrorists, just that he was a, again, the quote, assault risk. Yes. So the Supreme Court in Farmer, you know, set forth a deliberate indifference standard, and that's what governs here. And we have a continuum, you know, negligence on one hand and, you know, knowledge or purpose on the other. And it seems like this would fall, obviously, the deliberate indifference side of that. I mean, it's hard to say what, if it's, you know, one punch or two punches would be enough of an assault. But in this case, we know how dangerous he was. He was flagged again as a, quote, assault and escape risk. That was in his file. Yet he was permitted to go into this open dormitory where he had access to prisoners 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The record shows that he did help Jeremy Wilkinson with some legal work. The record is not clear if he did that because he was afraid of him and feared retribution. We don't know. We just know that there is some testimony to that effect. But what we do... There is testimony. Mr. Pearson also, at trial, denied any sort of relationship. So the jury was privy to that and, again, chose to believe Mr. Pearson and find in his favor. So going back... The onus is not on Mr. Pearson to notify... Well, I think there's enough for the jury to find, as it did, that he was a known assault risk based on this letter, in all capital letters, based on the fact that he was convicted of a weapon in an open dormitory where he could hurt somebody at any time of the day or night. It's not in the record, Your Honor. We just know he was convicted of possessing a weapon that's in violation of the prison rules. He should have been immediately removed from the dorm. And the unit team, including defendants McMillan and Wood, allowed him to remain there with the condition that they watch him, and they failed to do so. The second issue is whether the district court erred when it overruled, when it granted the defendant's motion for judgment as a matter of law. Here we have evidence. Well, it's a sub issue, I suppose. I misspoke. You're correct. I sort of looked at it as we have all the evidence here, and then secondly, whether the district court should have allowed the jury's verdict to stand, or whether he was proper in setting aside that verdict. And here, because there was enough evidence that a reasonable jury could have found for the plaintiff, all we can do on a Rule 50 on appeal is to say there was enough evidence and to reinstate the verdict. The district court went through all these Seventh Circuit cases, trying to sort of put a Seventh Circuit gloss on Farmer, and that's not permitted. The district court is not jury number two. The jury spoke, the jury believed Mr. Pearson, the jury heard all the evidence, and the jury found in his favor, and that verdict should be reinstated. Thank you.
Judge Miller granted the Rule 50 motion for judgment on the evidence because Pearson did not show that they were deliberately indifferent to his safety. The case law requires more than a showing that a prisoner presents some risk, and I think that's what we were kind of... Well, let me address that in a couple ways, if I may. First, it is correct that Judge Miller took the defendant's motion, Rule 50 motion, under advisement during the trial, didn't rule prior to the jury taking the case and making a decision. But I think Rule 50 motions, obviously, that are taken under advisement, and the federal rules permit a judge to... Well, juries can be unreasonable.
And why would you expect?
Well. Well, that's probably correct, Your Honor, in the sense that he decided that the evidence didn't meet the legal standard necessary to... He would not be permitted to weigh the evidence, but I don't believe he did. Let me briefly address the evidence as I understand it. I think it's a little bit different than what was presented previously. First, we go back to the his time at the jail and his time before that, his time before he came to the prison. We have nothing in the record excepting everything that Mr. Pearson has said about this case. We have nothing in the record suggesting that Mr. Wilkinson had ever assaulted... Well, Pearson... Yes, they are, but it depends on what he says. For example, when they were talking about the weapon, there's nothing in the paperwork in this case, the exhibits that were admitted at the trial that indicate that Mr. Wilkinson was convicted of having a weapon. Well, okay, there's an explanation for that, though. If Mr. Wilkinson's appeal was successful, and the paperwork suggests that there was some kind of appeal, they expunged the paperwork. Maybe that's not a wise thing for them to do, but that's what they do. I'd like to take a step back. Mr. Pearson did not say that Mr. Wilkinson was convicted of possessing a weapon. His testimony, if you look at it closely, he said, Mr. Wilkinson, he says, he understood, and this appears to be hearsay on his part, but it was his testimony. He said he understood that he was caught or found with a weapon. Mr. Pearson does not say that he was convicted. When we look at the paperwork, it does not say that Mr. Wilkinson was convicted of possessing a weapon. It would not be good, but we don't know what that weapon was. Of course. But there is no case, and I think this is where Judge Miller is going, there's no case out there that suggests that because a prisoner is... No, I'm not arguing there's one bite. I think you have to look and see whether, as the Supreme Court would have said in the Farmer case, whether Mr. Wilkinson presented an excessive risk or a substantial or pervasive risk in the circumstances of this case. That's... Well, everyone who is assigned to the Indiana State Prison, it's a maximum security prison, many of these people, including Mr. Pearson, have a more pronounced history of assault than Mr. Wilkinson did. Well, and also, these units did constitute... No, it's not. I'm looking at like the Langston, other cases have been cited in the briefs, where problems have developed. I think there's been a recognition by this court where what this court has recognized in the past and what the Supreme Court has recognized, of course, is that prisons like the Indiana State Prison are dangerous places with people who commit these kinds of... They are supposed to be secure, but there's a recognition that to hold these people liable, they need to be culpable. They need to have known something that would have made them... Well, I think you have to look closely at what he'd done. At the jail, he had not assaulted anyone. There's no indication he had threatened to assault any prisoners at any time. With the nightstick that he had in his cell at the jail, I have no idea. Apparently he had that. We don't know anything more than that. But we don't know that he ever threatened to use it or anything of that nature. He was destructive when he was at the jail. And that... No, he had been convicted, sent to the Department of Correction, and just assigned, Your Honor. Right, that's right. He had served as he had when he was at the jail. He'd misbehaved, and ultimately he was convicted of possession of cocaine, sent to the correctional system. They evaluated him as they always do, and determined that his placement in this case should be at the Indiana State Prison. And that's all that did at that point. Then when he arrived at the prison, they decide where he ought to be. There are many people with very serious assaultive histories at the prison. The dormitory units comprise probably about a quarter of the population at the prison. It's a choice that is there for a significant number of the prisoners at the prison. When we look at what happened at the jail, the most... Yes, at least with respect to Mr. Pearson. Mr. Pearson is in prison for attempted murder and attempted robbery, which are crimes. Of course, the attempted murder very clearly. I don't think there was evidence tested. I don't think specifically. I don't. There was some general evidence about what this unit was about, what the prison is about. Mr. Your Honor, I can't recall anything to you specifically. The honor dorm would probably be that, but the testimony was that there was dormitory space at the prison that was not honor dorm space. The reality is that many prisons have dormitories, some have cells, and the placements occur according to what space is available. That's correct. We believe the testimony shows that he was placed in the non-honor dorm. The honor dorm was the other dorm. Thank you.
I just have two brief points, Your Honors. Regarding the E-dorm, Mr. Pearson asked the government to produce to him what were the qualifications for being in that dorm, and the government produced the rules that are in the record that show that it is an honored dorm. It should have 10 years free from any sort of serious jail misconduct and 1 year in general population, and the jury heard that testimony. Secondly, the government has taken issue with the sufficiency of the evidence. We have to remember that Mr. Pearson was pro se all the way through his trial, and any weaknesses in the record are because the government was unable to produce the documents that would have answered a lot of these questions more directly than we have circumstantially thus far. I believe that was admitted. He testified without objection throughout the trial. And so for these reasons, we ask that you reinstate the jury's verdict in Mr. Pearson's favor. Thank you. Yes. Thank you.